You're listening to media from University Lutheran Church and Student Center. We are a multi-generational, Jesus-centered community of scripture, faith, and grace located in Tallahassee, Florida, on the campus of Florida State University. To learn more and to get connected to other resources, please visit universitylutheranchurch.org. We hope that the next few moments are a time when God speaks into your life by the power of His Holy Spirit about His Son, Jesus Christ. Hey everybody, welcome back to Together with Jesus. We are glad that you have joined us on this journey. We are now over halfway through the Gospel of Matthew, so congratulations to yourself and for sticking along with us, or if you're just getting started, welcome to the reading the Gospel two chapters at a time. We're glad that you've joined us. We are going to be reading Matthew 15 and 16 this week, and we're going to be reading this out of the New English Translation, that is the NET Bible or the NET Bible, and so we're going to get started with that right now. Then Pharisees and experts in the law came from Jerusalem to Jesus and said, "Why do your disciples disobey the tradition of the elders? For they don't wash their hands when they eat." He answered them, "And why do you disobey the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God said, 'Honor your father and mother,' and whoever insults his father or mother must be put to death. But you say, 'If someone tells his father or mother, whatever help you would have received from me is given to God, he does not need to honor his father.' You have nullified the word of God on account of your tradition. Hypocrites! Isaiah prophesied correctly about you when he said, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and they worship me in vain, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men.' And he called the crowd to him and said, 'Listen and understand. What defiles a person is not what goes into the mouth. It is what comes out of the mouth that defiles a person.' Then the disciples came to him and said, 'Do you know that when the Pharisees heard this saying, they were offended?' And he replied, 'Every plant that my heavenly Father did not plant will be uprooted. Leave them. They are blind guides. If someone who is blind leads another who is blind, both will fall into a pit.' Peter said to him, 'Explain this parable to us.' Jesus said, 'Even after all this, are you still so foolish? Don't you understand that whatever goes into the mouth enters the stomach and then passes out into the sewer? But the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart, and these things defile a person. For out of the heart come evil ideas, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. These are things that defile a person. It is not eating with unwashed hands that defiles a person.' After going out from there, Jesus went to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And a Canaanite woman from that area came and cried out, 'Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is horribly demon-possessed.' But he did not answer her a word. Then his disciples came and begged him, 'Send her away, because she keeps on crying out after us.' So he answered, 'I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.' But she came and bowed down before him and said, 'Lord, help me. It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs,' he said. 'Yes, Lord,' she replied, 'but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table.' Then Jesus answered her, 'Woman, your faith is great. Let what you want be done for you.' And her daughter was healed from that hour. When he left there, Jesus went along the Sea of Galilee. Then he went up a mountain where he sat down. Then large crowds came to him, bringing with them the lame, blind, crippled, mute, and many others. They laid them at his feet, and he healed them. As a result, the crowd was amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled healthy, the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they praised the God of Israel. Then Jesus called his disciples and said, 'I have compassion on the crowd because they have already been here with me these 3 days, and they have nothing to eat. I don't want to send them away hungry, since they may faint on the way.' The disciples said to him, 'Where can we get enough bread in this desolate place to satisfy so great a crowd?' Jesus said to them, 'How many loaves do you have?' They replied, 7 and a few small fish. After instructing the crowd to sit down on the ground, he took the 7 loaves and the fish, and after giving thanks, he broke them and began giving them to the disciples, who gave them to the crowds. They all ate and were satisfied, and they picked up the broken pieces left over, 7 baskets full. Not counting women and children, there were 4,000 men who ate. After sending away the crowd, he got into the boat and went to the region of Magadan. Now when the Pharisees and Sadducees came to test Jesus, they asked him to show them a sign from heaven. He said, "When evening comes, you say, 'It will be fair weather because the sky is red,' and in the morning, 'It will be stormy today because the sky is red and darkening.' You know how to judge correctly the appearance of the sky, but you cannot evaluate the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation asks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of Jonah." Then he left them and went away. When the disciples went to the other side, they forgot to take bread. "Watch out," Jesus said to them, "beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." So they began to discuss this among themselves, saying, "It is because we brought no bread." When Jesus learned of this, he said, "You who have such little faith, why are you arguing among yourselves about having no bread? Do you still not understand? Don't you remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up, or the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and how many baskets you took up? How could you not understand that I was not speaking to you about bread? But beware of the yeast of the Pharisee and the Sadducees." Then they understood that he had not told them to be on guard against the yeast and bread, but against the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. When Jesus came to the area of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" They answered, "Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "You are blessed, Simon, son of Jonah, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will have been bound in heaven, and whatever you release on earth will have been released in heaven." Then he instructed his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Christ. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and the experts in the law, and be killed, and on the third day raised. So Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "God forbid, Lord, this must not happen to you." But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are a stumbling block to me, because you are not setting your mind on God's interests, but on man's." Then Jesus said to his disciple, "If anyone wants to become my follower, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life because of me will find it. For what does it benefit a person if he gains the whole world but forfeits his life? Or what can a person give in exchange for his life? For the Son of Man will come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will reward each person according to what he has done. I tell you the truth, there are some standing here who will not experience death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." Hey everybody, welcome back to the Together with Jesus After Party. We are glad that you are sticking around for this part of the podcast with us. This is where we kind of break down the readings as we have them, the 2 chapters, Matthew 15 and 16, that are here with us. And so kind of big picture, what we're looking at in these 2 chapters is we're seeing a lot of shifting. So there's a lot of shifting happening with Jesus. He's going to the Gentiles. He's talking about the cross, and he's doing a lot of things that he hasn't done before. And so a lot of that is sort of interesting content for us. We're just a little bit over halfway through the Gospel of Matthew, and here, right at kind of the middle, it seems like Matthew is showing us that there's kind of a hinge that's happening with what Jesus is doing. And so we're going to jump right in with Matthew 15, verses 1 through 20, and And here we have a story about the Pharisees coming to Jesus, and they ask him why his disciples are not washing their hands before they eat. Now, this is not just an issue of hygiene. It is actually an issue that is an issue of religiosity. And so the Pharisees and the Sadducees had this intricate process of washing their hands before their meals and other things. Washing your hands is actually not really mentioned all that much in the Old Testament. It's mentioned a few times for the priests in the Levitical writings. And yet here, the Pharisees have kind of come up with their own thing. And so it's the tradition of the elders is kind of what this gets called by the Pharisees themselves. And they bring this up to Jesus. They're like, hey, why do your disciples not hold to the tradition of the elders? Essentially, Jesus comes back from that by saying, well, because it's a tradition, it's not actually something that is in the Bible. Jesus, I suppose, is acting like a good Lutheran there, and so he's really calling into question the authority that the Pharisees have and the authority that the scribes have in terms of sort of bringing these things up. There's a little bit of irony here. In fact, the scribes, the particular people that are along for the ride with the Pharisees this time, are people that would have been people that would have handwritten copies of the Torah, would have handwritten copies of the prophets, and they, because of that, they would have known really well what was contained in the sacred writings of Israel. And the irony here is that they're sort of advocating for a practice that is not really in those writings. And so Jesus then uses this as an opportunity to talk about what really makes you unclean. What really makes you unclean is nothing necessarily that comes in from the outside, but it's the evil that comes out of a sinful heart. And so that's what Jesus is kind of talking about as he's talking to these Pharisees and these scribes. Then after that, Jesus does this interesting thing. He's been in a Gentile area. We talked about that at the end of the last podcast. And so he continues to be in this Gentile area. And here he's going even deeper into the Gentile area. And so even to the extent that they mentioned the cities Tyre and Sidon. And Tyre and Sidon were the cities of Phoenicia. They were kind of the historic home of the Philistines. And because of that, this is a place that is sort of a rival, at the very least, to the disciples, to Jesus, to anybody who's Jewish. And it's likely that the people that are in this region of Tyre and Sidon also would have seen Jesus and his Jewish buddies as also being kind of rivals and things like that. Well, you go in there, and then you find that there is a woman who knows who Jesus is, not only knows who he is, but calls him by a very interesting title, calls him the Son of David. Now, this is a very Jewish title. It's a title that harkens back to the reign of David, kind of the golden age of Israel. And for her to do that, to say, Jesus, Son of David, we don't think that she's just saying, hey, you're an Israelite, therefore you're a son of David, but this is actually like referring to something that shows that she understands who Jesus is. When you see the term Son of David used in Matthew's gospel over and over again, it seems to be somebody who seems to kind of get who Jesus is. Well, she says, Son of David, my daughter is sick, I need you to heal her. And Jesus just kind of doesn't say anything. He ignores her to the extent that she keeps on crying out after him. And the disciples come after Jesus and they're like, hey, can you do something about this? Jesus then says that he's only been sent to the lost sheep of Israel. In which case, it's an interesting statement, because if he's really only sent to the lost sheep of Israel, well, what on earth are you doing here in Syrophoenicia, Jesus? And so there's something there that seems to not quite link up. And maybe it's because of that that the Syrophoenician woman actually comes back at Jesus. She says, once again, Lord, please help me. Jesus says, you know, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. And then she has this kind of masterful comeback, which, yes, but even the dogs get to eat the things that have been dropped from the children's table. And because of that phrasing, because of those words, that shows Jesus that she has faith. She not only gets who he is because of the Son of David remark, but she also has faith that he can do whatever he wants. And she also has kind of that humility that seems to be very important when we're talking about Jesus, especially in these miracles. Jesus then, after that, he continues on in this Gentile area. He's moving closer to Israel, but he's still on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, so he's in very Gentile area here. He goes about healing, and the crowds come to him. He goes about healing them, and then after he heals them, you have this sort of deja vu moment. In fact, there's a deja vu moment even before this. So when you get Jesus healing the crowds, it says that, you know, Jesus goes up there, and he gets up on top of a mountain, and while he's on top of a mountain, he sits down, and that's exactly what Jesus does right as he's about to give the Sermon on the Mount, which we looked at several weeks ago. Well, here, it's almost like Jesus is kind of taking those same positions that he had in Israel with the Gentile people. And so this, it seems to be kind of a massive shift for Jesus. Jesus is no longer the person who's, you know, just telling his disciples, hey, only stick to Judea, don't go to the Samaritans, don't go to the Gentiles. Instead, what Jesus is doing here now is he's allowing the gospel to break into the Gentile areas. The feeding of the 4,000 is supposed to be kind of this mirror image of feeding of the 5,000. And it's this mirror image that has all sorts of sort of Gentile imagery in it. If you just watch the numbers, there's some Gentile imagery in here. So if you look back at the feeding of the 5,000, there's five loaves of bread. Here, there's seven loaves of bread, and the seven is a sign of completeness. A lot of folks think that Matthew included that for a reason, kind of hinting at, okay, now that Jesus is feeding the Gentiles as well, things are complete. And you also have, you know, it's the feeding of the 4,000 instead of the 5,000. And the idea there is that there's four corners of the earth. And so the idea of this being four means that it's going out to all of the different corners, all of the different cardinal directions that are out there. They are fully fed. And on top of that, there are seven baskets full of leftovers. And that kind of shows as well. Okay, so back with the feeding of the 5,000, there were 12 baskets of leftovers, kind of the idea that there were, you know, a basket of leftovers for every tribe in Israel. Here you've got seven baskets of leftovers that are there for anybody. It's a complete number. And so it really seems that Matthew here, in crafting his gospel and telling us this story, is really kind of showing us, hey, Jesus now is moving distinctly into this area of bringing the gospel to the Gentiles. Well, after that happens, we have the Pharisees show up again. And the Pharisees, this time, they've brought some more friends. This time, they're not bringing along their friends, the scribes. They're bringing along their friends, the Sadducees. And the Sadducees really aren't friends at all. They are a very distinctly different theological group. The Sadducees were marked by things like they didn't believe in angels, they didn't believe in the resurrection. Most of them, it appeared, only believed that the first five books of the Bible, the Torah, were really, really kind of theologically correct. The prophets were not to be relied upon, and they tend to be sort of, in our terms, probably a little bit more of the sort of theologically liberal side. They don't believe in all of this supernatural stuff. They do believe more in kind of doing what's right, and kind of, you know, working that out in your own right. They show up, and it's an interesting thing that they show up together. They show up and they ask for a sign, basically to test Jesus again. And we're not really sure why they do this, why they both show up. It could be that they're trying to figure out who would best align with Jesus, and maybe one of them, depending on how Jesus answers or what Jesus shows, wants to bring Jesus under their wing. But that doesn't happen, because instead of receiving a sign, Jesus tells them once again that they will receive no sign except for the sign of Jonah. And if you remember from before, the sign of Jonah is a sign that says that, you know, Jonah went into this very Gentile nation, the people of Nineveh, and went and preached in it. And after he went and preached in it, they then turned and they repented. And that seems to be the sign that Jesus is saying here. take this sign upon yourself. Look what I just did in these Gentile lands. If that's not enough of a sign for you, then I don't know what is really. And so then Jesus gets back in the boat. They're going across the Sea of Galilee. They're going back to his sort of headquarters in Capernaum. And Jesus kind of says this offhanded thing. He says, you know, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees or the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And as he does that, it seems like that throws the disciples off. They're not quite sure what he's talking about. It appears that they think that he's talking about bread. And maybe they're a little bit concerned that they didn't bring any bread, and Jesus seems to get kind of miffed at that. He says, hey, didn't I just do all of these miracles with bread? It seems like it's obvious. I can come up with bread if I need bread. But what I'm telling you about is to be concerned about this yeast. And yeast is a picture that he uses in his parables as something that grows. And so he's kind of telling his disciples, hey, watch out for the things that grow. And certainly we saw that as the Pharisees talked about the tradition of the elders. This tradition of the elders of washing hands seemed to come from a pretty innocuous place, but got to a point where it kind of got overblown. And that seems to be what Jesus is talking about here. And yet the disciples are kind of like, I don't get it. After that, then you get Peter confessing Jesus as the Christ. This is a big deal. So offhandedly, Jesus says, hey, who are people saying that I am? And the disciples come up with a few different things that people are saying. They're saying that Jesus is John the Baptist. They're saying that Jesus is Elijah. They're saying that Jesus is even possibly Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah is an interesting one because John the Baptist, well, that's just kind of weird because Jesus and John the Baptist were obviously in the same room together or seen together, so it doesn't make sense that they would be the same person. Elijah, that does make sense because Elijah was supposed to come before the Messiah, and so people are kind of putting together that God's doing a big work. But Jeremiah seems to be a head-scratcher, and a part of the reason that people think that they specifically mention Jeremiah here is that Jeremiah and Jesus had some of the same things that were going on in their messaging. So Jeremiah, just like Jesus, said, hey, the temple, it's going to get torn down. Jeremiah, just like Jesus, is hated by the religious authorities. And so because of that, it could be that some people were like, well, reincarnation, not really a Jewish belief, but Jesus does seem to have the appearance of Jeremiah. And so maybe, you know, he sort of has the spirit of Jeremiah, sort of like Elisha had a helping of the spirit of Elijah. So after all of that, Jesus says, okay, well, who do you say that I am? And right after that, Peter says, oh, well, you're the Christ. And this is a pretty big acknowledgement from Peter, because Christ means Messiah. Christ means that he is the one who they have been waiting on for, you know, years upon years, hundreds of years, thousands of years even. And so for Peter to actually acknowledge that Jesus is the Messiah, for him to say, okay, I believe that this is who you are, this is really big news. And because of that, Jesus stops and he says, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. Now, when Peter does this, what we see going on here is that Jesus is recognizing that now there is this confession of faith of him as the Messiah, where he can begin to build his church on that confession of faith. And by the way, that church thing, that's kind of a new big thing here. This is another one of those shifts where all of a sudden Jesus is talking about the church, the ecclesia, the called out people. Instead of the synagogues, instead of the people of Israel, he's talking about a new grouping of folks that are going to be in the sort of working of God. And so this is a really important point as Peter goes and confesses this. Well, right after Jesus says all of this great stuff about Peter, Peter goes and he has to kind of ruin it because Jesus then does another big thing. He prophesies about his death. Now, as I said at the beginning of the program here, we're about halfway through Matthew, or a little over halfway through Matthew, and now all of a sudden, Jesus is letting his disciples into kind of the full picture of what he has come to do. And so as we have that, we have this kind of new thing that's popping up where, you know, Jesus all of a sudden is revealing that he is, the kingdom of heaven is not going to come just by him being a great Messiah or being a military or governmental leader, but rather his being a Messiah is going to happen through him being put to death by the religious authorities, and then after that, raising again from the dead. Well, Peter doesn't like the way that sounds at all. He doesn't want his good friend to die, and so he pulls Jesus aside privately and says, hey, this doesn't sound good. In fact, it says he rebukes him, so it's maybe even harsher than that. And then Jesus turns and he rebukes Peter, telling Peter that he doesn't have his mind on the things of God, but rather on the things of men. He's saying, you know, Peter, you're just thinking about this in terms of your plan, but you need to think about this in terms of God's plan. After that, Jesus then turns and talks to the rest of the disciples about what it's going to mean to follow him, that's going to involve taking up their own crosses and following Jesus. Now, to us, take up your cross, that's something that we've heard a bunch of times, but it's also something that I think sort of rolls off of us pretty easily. But when you're thinking about this, to Jesus' disciples, the cross is nothing but an execution device. And so for Jesus to say, take up your cross and follow me, it's kind of like, take up your noose and follow me, take up your electric chair and follow me. And, you know, kind of implying that they are also going to die and that they need to be ready to give up their lives. And in giving up their lives, they're actually going to gain their lives back. And so then after that, Jesus says this interesting thing. He says, truly I say to you, there are some who are standing here with you who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Now, a lot of folks have kind of wondered, okay, what does that mean? Obviously, it doesn't mean that, you know, that one of the people that was standing there is still alive today because we're still waiting for Jesus to come back in the resurrection. So some people think that this is just Jesus referencing what is going to happen immediately after this, which is the transfiguration, that he's saying, hey, there's going to be some of you that are going to see me coming in my kingdom, meaning the transfiguration. You're going to see me in glory. Other people think this is referring to Jesus's resurrection when he comes out of the grave and people see that, and that is certainly going to be the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. You also have the possibility that this could be the ascension. But either way, we're not really sure which one of those Jesus is referring to. However, we know that it's one of those things that Jesus is referring to, that people will see him as he truly is in that moment. Well, thank you so much for being along with us in week 8 here of Together with Jesus. We're so glad that you could be a part of this with us, and we look forward to doing this with you again next week. Thanks so much. God's blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this media from University Lutheran Church and Student Center. To learn more and to get connected to other resources, please visit universitylutheranchurch.org. If you would like to financially support more media from University Lutheran, please visit our website and click the Give Now button, which will enable you to engage in the Christian discipline of giving tithes and offerings to God through His church. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord lift up His face upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you with favor and give you peace.